listening to Truth To You with Jono, and you can download these programs freely from the website at truthforyou.org. That's truth, number two, letteryou.org. Joining me today is my friends, my mates, Nehemiah Gordon and Keith Johnson. My friends, welcome back to the program.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, good to be back.
Now, I know both of you are jumping out of your skin, and before we get started, before we even kick off with what you've got to tell us today, Keith, I just want you to remind everybody, I know we've spoken about it before in the program, but just remind everyone, Proclaim the Name campaign. Just tell us about it one more time.
Well, it's actually gone to a different level. They're going to realize this after this show today. I want to give a little background, but the point of it is that on the 1st of January of the Gregorian year, I was in New York City, and I went to an ancient obelisk that was brought over to the United States. The obelisk itself is about 3,000 years old from Egypt. It was brought over to the United States in the 20s, I think it was, sometime there. And so I had decided that I wanted to find a significant place in the United States to proclaim the name Yehovah in light of the Proclaim the Name campaign that we'd started, where people around the world, as a result of reading the book, getting the information, listening to Nehemiah and myself at this year as we've spoken, there's just a bunch of things that have happened with the name. And so I thought, what could we do that would be sort of putting the name in action? Mm. The idea being that a person would select a place, proclaim the name in any creative way that they would like, and just make the acknowledge that Yehovah, He is God. And using creative terms, creative places, etc. Well, after I had done this video, I got a phone call from Israel. Mm. My friend Nehemiah Gordon calls me on the phone, and he does his normal thing. He calls me. He says, "What have you done? I don't understand. You've put up a video, and this is unauthorized. How did this happen with a party?" And what he was really saying was, when he does that, if I get that phone call, Jono, that means he's excited about it. But how did I do it without him?
No, so,
so the reason I have to give this background in terms of what we're about to talk about today, he came up with this really great idea. He said, you know, we've got to go to the ancient obelisks around the world and proclaim the name Yehovah. And I thought, God, what a great idea, Nehemiah. We should do that. And so we were talking creatively back and forth. Mm. Long story short is that he's come up with...
Like I always interrupt, which is... That, you know, I was thinking about it. What Keith did was so powerful, because he goes to New York and he actually bothered to read beforehand on the internet what it says in hieroglyphics on the obelisk, which I never even thought of doing. So I got to give him credit there. And what it was saying on the obelisk, it was proclaiming the pagan Egyptian god of the sun, whose name was Ra, to be the father, to be the creator of the world, the father of creation. Mm-hmm. And what Keith was doing is essentially saying, Ra has this beautiful obelisk to proclaim his name. Who's proclaiming the name of the creator of the universe? Mm. So I'm going to go and I'm going to stand with a shofar in Central Park in New York and blow the shofar, and all the New Yorkers are going to think I'm crazy, but I'm going to proclaim the name Yehovah. Mm. And I thought that was so powerful, because the pagan deities have all these beautiful, amazing monuments around the world proclaiming their names, and who is proclaiming the name of the creator? So that was why I was so excited about it.
Yeah. So, Jono, what we did was we started this ambassadors campaign, where people just simply sign up for the newsletter, they can get information. So what I did, which actually excited me, so you start very small and say, okay, who's willing to sign up to be a part of the ambassador's newsletter and become a proclaim the name person, a proclaim the name campaign? And, you know, when I got the phone call from Nehemiah, as what usually happens is he took it to a different level. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll get a few people, they'll do this. Well, he started talking about it, Jono, and from then, you know, it's history, because people have actually gone out into the city squares and sent videos and saying, you know, that they're going to proclaim the name. Well, the reason we're on this morning is because something has happened that has taken it to a different level. So that's why we're on the radio show.
Before we get there, let me just remind everybody, www.hishallowedname.com, hishallowedname.com. And when you go there, you will find, is it down the right-hand side, Keith? Am I correct? There is an invitation to sign up.
On the right side is the newsletter, but on the left, on the top is the Ambassador's Embassy, a page specifically that has been created so people can, one, see the different places around the world where people have signed in or you know, come to that page, but more importantly, the guidelines for how to create a video. And it's really, really, really simple. You just go to the Ambassador's Embassy, you'll see the information there. There's a couple videos there up now. By the time this show is done, there will be one that was going to change the game completely, as they'll hear. But you go to the embassy, you sign up for the newsletter, you get the information, and hopefully they become an ambassador of the name.
Okay. So now, a couple of days ago, I was talking to Joel, and we recorded an interview, which the listeners may have already listened to by the time this one's up. And he was very excited when he and I got together. I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Let me tell you about what I've been doing all day. I'm so tired. It's just been a full day." I said, "What have you been doing?" He said, "I went on a hike. We went to Mount Ebal." He said, it's a rare opportunity to go. And I went with Nehemiah, and he gave a little bit of the background, a little bit of the history there and what it was like there. And the following day, there's an article in the Rosh Hashanah newspaper here, and it says 12 years after the murder. This is the title of the article. 12 years after the murder, Jewish hikers return to Mount Ebal. For the first time in more than 11 years, hikers return to Mount Ebal for an historic walking tour of the area. This is by Elad Benari and Yoni Kapinski. So what I'm going to do for the listeners, I'm going to take that link, I'm going to put it on this post. You'll find it there. It's worth reading. There's a little bit of background there. There's also a video that you can watch. If you're clever, you'll be able to spot Joel a couple of times, and maybe even now Nehemiah. You were there.
Yeah.
And what happens in the 19th?
So you can actually
in the
see
19th
me in the video at 19 seconds. You can see my bald head and my back. And I'm wearing
Let me tell you what's really interesting, ladies and gentlemen. What's really funny? I mean, listen, this is a pretty flowing show here, right? What's really funny is that if we had gotten the video and Nehemiah hadn't done what he had done, I never would have known if he was there or not. I see Yoel three times. I don't see Nehemiah, but luckily
Nehemiah was looking for the camera. I'm telling you.
The funny thing is Nehemiah sat and looked in the video, and he couldn't find himself. He's like, "I'm not in the video. I don't understand."
I found my bald head afterwards.
So there he is in the 19th second of this video. You've got to watch it and you've got to read up on this. But there is you guys are excited. Something happened there. Nehemiah, you're going to have to fill us in from the moment you got on the bus. Can you do that for us?
Okay.
Okay. So
I have
so
to say one thing.
Keith.
I must, what my you, first Israeli interruption. Before Nehemiah talks about getting on the bus, can you Nehemiah, take us back before the whole bus issue? Because this was what was significant to me, Jono. Nehemiah called in a sort of casual manner and said, he called me, he called me sometimes he'll call me just out of the blue, and he says, "Keith, I've decided where I'm going to go to proclaim the name." And he gave me some background. So I want him to tell us about that before he got on the bus.
Great.
Okay, so the tour that we did to Mount Ebal is really, it was a special tour, and it's a special place. And the reason it's such a special place is that this is an altar that God actually commands them to build in the Torah. Mm-hmm. He speaks about all of Israel. He commands all of Israel to come to Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, which are these two mountains up near Shechem, or Shechem, as some people say, the modern town of Nablus. And he commands them to perform this ceremony. And this ceremony is half the nation is standing on Mount Ebal, or Ebal in English, and the other half is standing on Mount Gerizim, and they proclaim the blessing from Mount Gerizim, putting it upon Mount Ebal, and from Mount Ebal, they proclaim the curse, putting it upon Mount Gerizim. And this blessing and curse is, if you keep the Torah, here are the blessings, and if you abandon the Torah, here's the curse that comes with it. And so this is actually a very significant event in the history of the world, I would say, but in the history of Israel's mission to the world. And the reason I say that is in Deuteronomy chapter 27, where he repeats the whole issue of the blessing and the curse on Gerizim and Ebal. He then says in verse 9, "And Moses and the priests and the Levites said to all of Israel, saying, 'Silence and hear, Israel. Today you become a nation to Jehovah your God.'" And what they're talking about is that day that you stand on Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim and proclaim the blessing and the curse, that day you become a nation. That day is your induction as a nation. And when that actually takes place in the book of Joshua, it speaks in terms of a covenant. And so it describes this altar here that's to be built on Mount Ebal. And specifically, it says in let's start all the way in. Maybe you can read it in English from Deuteronomy 27, because this is, I consider this to be one of the most important passages in the Bible. And what's interesting about it is that the commandments given in Deuteronomy 27 to build the altar with the specifications, and then Joshua chapter 8, it actually says how he carried it out. And why this is so important is that archaeologists actually found this altar, and I'll tell more about that in a bit. But read
so
the
passage. Let's work our way through those two relevant passages then. I start from verse 1 in 27?
Yeah, please. Absolutely.
Deuteronomy 27, verse 1. Now Moses, with the elders of Israel, commanded the people, saying, keep all the commandments which I command you today, and it shall be on the day when you cross over the Jordan to the land which Yehovah your Elohim is giving you, that you shall set up for yourselves large stones and whitewash them with lime. You shall write on them all the words of this Torah. And when you are crossed over, that you may enter the land which Yehovah your Elohim is giving you, a land flowing with milk and honey, just as Yehovah Elohim of your fathers promised you. Therefore, it shall be when you have crossed over the Jordan, that on Mount Ebal you shall set up these stones, which I command you today, and you shall whitewash them with lime, and there you shall build an altar to Yehovah your Elohim.
Come on.
An altar of stones, you shall not use any iron tool on them. You shall build with whole stones the altar of Yehovah your Elohim, and offer burnt offerings on it to Yehovah your Elohim. You shall offer peace offerings and shall eat there and rejoice before Yehovah your Elohim. And you shall write very plainly on the stones all the words of this Torah. Then Moses and the priests, the Levites, spoke to all Israel, saying, take heed and listen, O Israel. This day you have become the people of Yehovah your Elohim. Therefore, you shall obey the voice of Yehovah your Elohim and obey and observe his commandments, his statutes, which I command you today. And then it goes on to talk about the curses pronounced from Mount Ebal. Would you like me to read those, or shall we go to Joshua?
Well, let's jump over to Joshua, and I encourage people to go and read those, because that's a...
Can I read Joshua 8 in my NIV Bible, please?
No, chapter 8, verse 30, is what I meant. But
No, so it says, then Joshua built on Mount Ebal an altar to Yehovah, and the reason I wanted to read... I'm sorry. Then Joshua built on Mount Ebal an altar to the Lord. I really apologize, you all. I thought for a minute I wasn't reading my Methodist Bible. It says, to the Lord, the God of Israel. And what I get excited about, whenever I read about someone building an altar, and this is why I've been actually awakened in the middle of the night, the last few nights as Nehemiah and Yoel have done this. And when I read that, anytime I would have read that in the past, I just kind of move on. Okay, so what's the big deal? In fact, I was telling someone about this event, this thing that took place, and they said, so why is that significant? Why is it significant that someone goes and sees an ancient altar? What does that have to do with the name of God? What's that got to do with the name of the Lord? And so when I thought they handed me a softball, and I want you, Nehemiah, to again share something very significant that you said about this. But I just want to share with people this idea that when the altar was built, it was built, as we mentioned, he says, you build this altar, they will become a nation. These are the things, they offered sacrifices, etc. But one of the things we find about the altar is when the altar was built, from the earliest times of the patriarchs, the altar would be built, they'd call upon the name. The altar would be built, they'd call upon the name. The altar would be built, they call upon the name. And then we get to Joshua chapter 8, and it says, then Joshua built on Mount Ebal an altar to, and then in English it just says, to the Lord, and we move on. But when I read that now, it's an altar built to Yehovah, where his name would be proclaimed according to Exodus 20:24. And what does it say? Nehemiah, would you read the verse? One of my most favorite verses in all of the Hebrew Bible.
Exodus 20:24. But before we get to Exodus 20:24, I want to read Genesis chapter 12, verse 8. It describes an altar that Abraham built between the cities of Bethel and Ai. It says, and he built there an altar to Yehovah, and he called upon the name of Yehovah. And then again, we see Isaac doing the exact same thing in Genesis 26, verse 25. It says there, when he comes to Beersheba, it says, and he built there an altar, and he called upon the name of Yehovah. And then guess who else does that, builds an altar and calls on the name?
Jacob.
Elijah does that at Mount Carmel.
Come on
now. There's actually a great scene there where Elijah at Mount Carmel goes, and in verse 24, he challenges the prophets of Baal. He says, and you call upon the name of your God, and I'll call upon the name of Yehovah, and it shall to pass, the God will answer with fire. He is God. And the entire people answered and said, "It is the matter is good." We know the rest of the story. Eliyahu, Elijah called the name Jehovah, and a fire came down and consumed his sacrifice. And the prophets of Baal were told to call all day long. They were dancing around and performing their rituals, and they couldn't get the Baal to answer them. And Elijah would mock them, saying, "What's the matter? Is Baal asleep? Is he going around about his business?" So I think it's so powerful. There's this connection in Scripture between an altar and calling upon the name. Mm. And I know, Keith, one of your favorite passages and one of my favorite passages, which makes that connection, and you might miss it if you only read part of the verse. It's in Exodus chapter 20, and it says in verse 24, it says, "In every place that I cause my name to be mentioned, there I will come, and I will bless you." And what's the context? Oh. The first half of verse 24 talks about building an altar. That's the opening of the verse. And then verse 25 goes on and talks about other rules about building an altar. So the context here is building an altar, and what do you naturally do an altar? You call upon the name of Jehovah. And so that's what he's saying. Every place I cause my name to be mentioned, there I will come to you and I will bless you. Because what you do at altars is you call upon the name. That's the context. Yes. So when Joshua built this altar, you know one of the things he would have done there is call upon the name. Amen. And that's why I was so excited to go to Joshua's altar and myself do what probably hasn't been done there. I mean, Keith pointed this out to me afterwards. He said, "Nehemiah, you realize that it's probably been thousands of years since the time of Joshua since someone stood there and called upon the name." And that really excited me.
That is. It's almost giving me goosebumps just thinking about it. Listen, before we now, I want to talk about the proclaiming of the name and the video that you recorded. Before we do that, shall I just give the listeners the background of Joshua chapter 8 verses 30 through to 35? Is that okay?
I was reading one verse, and you guys don't let me say anything else here. Are you kidding me? Okay, Jono, go ahead, read the rest of the verse.
Right.
I was reading.
Sorry. Now you interrupt me when you want to say something, but this is verse 30 and on. Now, like you need permission to interrupt me. So now Joshua built an altar to Jehovah, Elohim of Israel, in Mount Ebal, as Moses, servants of Jehovah, had commanded the children of Israel, as it is written in the book of the Torah of Moses, an altar of whole stones over which no man has wielded an iron tool. And they offered on it burnt offerings to Jehovah and sacrificed peace offerings. And there, in the presence of the children of Israel, he wrote on the stones a copy of the Torah of Moses, which he had written. Then all Israel, with their elders, their officials, the judges, stood on either side of the ark before the priests, the Levites, who bore the ark of the covenant of Jehovah, the stranger as well as he was born among them. Half of them were in front of Mount Gerizim, half of them were in front of Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of Jehovah, had commanded before, that they should bless the people of Israel. And afterward, he would read all the words of the Torah, blessings and the cursings, according to all that is written in the book of the Torah. And there was not a word of all that Moses had commanded, which Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel, with the women, the little ones, the stranger who were living among them.
And I want to say this. What caught my attention, Jono and Nehemiah, when the phone call came from Nehemiah saying, "Keith, you won't believe what I'm gonna do," and then I'm talking to Yoel on the phone, and Yoel saying, "Well, I've called the army," and Nehemiah's going to explain something about this, but he says, "I've called them, and there's no room. Looks like we're not going to be able to do it." So they take me to the top of the mountain and say, "We're going to do this." And then Yoel says, "Oh, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to do it." And then they take me to the top of the mountain and say, "Well, there might be room on the bus." And then they say, "Oh, well, there's no room on the bus." So they're going back and forth with me. But the reason I didn't understand this, and Nehemiah explained it to me, and I want him to explain it to everybody else, what happened 12 years ago at this place, and also the archaeological aspects. Yeah. So
before we get to that, I want to share something from what you just read, Joshua chapter 8, verse 35, which personally for me is a very important verse. It's a verse that was very, I would say, pivotal in my own personal journey. Because I was, I think anybody who listens to our weekly Torah Pearls program knows that I was raised as an Orthodox Jew and realized at a certain age that I didn't accept the doctrine of the Orthodox, that the Torah was a separate Torah, an oral Torah was revealed to Moses on Mount Sinai, and I just embraced the written scripture. And one of the things I was challenged by my teachers, my rabbis, who frankly were much more knowledgeable than me at the time, and when they said this, it really challenged me. It frightened me even. They said, "You know, look, you're saying you just want to follow the written Torah and not the teachings of the rabbis, which we claim were revealed to Moses on Mount Sinai. But most of what Moses received from God was never written down. And if you follow only the written Torah, you have an incomplete picture of the revelation of God." And when I came to this verse, I knew that they were wrong. Because it says there was not a word, literally says in Hebrew, davar, there was not a word of all that Moses commandment, all that Moses commanded, that Joshua did not read. Now, that means that everything that Moses commanded was written, because he read it all.
In the book of the Torah.
Exactly. He's reading the book of the Torah. He's not reciting an oral law. Mm. And this proves to me, and this wasn't the only verse, but this was a pivotal key verse. I mean, this is definitive, a definitive clear verse, that every single thing that Moses commanded Israel was written down in that book of the Torah. Mm. And this myth of the oral law, you know, I just couldn't accept that. Well, let's go back to Mount Ebal, because Mount Ebal has been the focus of archaeological exploration really going back to the 1920s. Because look, we just read two passages, and there's a third one earlier in Deuteronomy where he first lays out this idea of assembling the people at Mount Ebal and Gerizim. So people have been going to Mount Ebal looking for Joshua's altar since the 1920s, and nobody found it. And the reason nobody found it, we know today, is they were looking in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. And specifically, Mount Ebal faces a mountain to the south, which the Samaritan tradition, now the Samaritans, if you remember, they're Gentiles who were brought in from Babylonia by the Assyrians and settled forcibly in place of the Israelites who had originally lived in the northern kingdom of Israel. And these Samaritans had a tradition that the mountain to the south of Ebal, that that's Mount Gerizim. And it turns out that that's actually the site of a pagan Roman temple that the Romans built there, and probably even of an earlier Israelite pagan altar, because the Israelites had set up these forbidden altars all over the place. And the real Mount Ebal, it turns out, is actually the mountain to the east of the real Gerizim is the mountain to the east of Ebal, not the one to the south of it. So this archaeologist comes along in the 1980s. His name is Adam Zertal, and he's an Israeli archaeologist. He's not looking for Joshua's altar. He probably doesn't even think such a thing exists, because he's really coming from a secular Jewish perspective. Jews who don't necessarily believe in scripture, they're looking at it as ancient history. Mm-hmm. There probably was never such a man named Joshua. It's a myth, kind of like King Arthur. That's the type of thing that these people believe. And so he wasn't looking for Joshua's altar. He's actually combing all of Judea and Samaria that were liberated by Israel in 1967, combing over every rock at every pile, and he comes to this pile of rocks on Mount Ebal, on the eastern slope of Mount Ebal, where nobody expects to find anything of any significance, and he thinks it's probably a Byzantine farmhouse or maybe a Persian a guard tower over the crops, and he uncovers, pulls off these stones, and under this massive mound of stones, he finds what is very clearly an altar. And the altar, the shape of the altar, the dimension of the altar actually match ancient Jewish descriptions of the altar that was in the Second Temple. That is, Joshua, the way he built his altar apparently later became the paradigm, the model for building altars. It's very similar to the altar described in the book of Ezekiel as
well. So this one, what you're saying is this one was like a prototype, if you like, of the one that...
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Slow down on this one.
And so he finds this altar, and one of the things that points to it, just real quick, one of the things that points to it being an altar is that it has a rock platform made of unhewn stones. The entire thing are called field stones, uncut rocks, which is exactly what we read, that they're not supposed to be cut. They're supposed to be just regular stones, which metal hasn't touched.
Yes.
And then it says in Exodus chapter 20, verse 26, it says, and you shall not go up upon steps upon my altar, that your nakedness not be uncovered. And the way this was understood by later Jews is that you have to have a ramp leading up to the altar. Well, guess what? Joshua's altar, discovered by Adam Zertal, had a ramp leading up to it. So it's clearly an altar. And then one other thing that points to it being an altar is they found bones of burned animals, 942 bones they uncovered, and they sent them to a zoologist at the Hebrew University, and he looked at them. Now, normally you find burned bones in a city. I mean, let's say you have a city where people are living, and the city is destroyed by invaders, and it's burned, so you're going to find bones, and they're going to be burned. Except what you find in those types of places is you find bones especially of dogs and of donkeys, because those were used in ancient Israel. Well, these 942 bones, all of them except for three, are from bulls, goat, and sheep. And they're all one yearling animals, and they're all males, which is exactly the prescription commanded in the Torah of the types of sacrifices you have to bring. And now there's a couple of exceptions. There's a hedgehog that dug his way down there, and there's a rabbit, and there's a fallow deer that somehow got in that pile. But primarily, the 942 bones are bulls, sheep, and goat, which are the three, if you look in Leviticus 17, those are the only three species you're allowed to bring as sacrifices. Mm-hmm. And this points to it being an altar.
Mm.
They were burned, and they were actually buried on the site. Now, there's another exciting piece of information that even Keith doesn't know, but I'm going to let him speak because he was trying to interject before.
Well, Keith, we were just saying before that this is the potentially the prototype of the ulcer that was in in the temple. What goes through your mind?
Well, that's the thing that you know, as they were explaining, you know, Nehemiah was explaining this from an archaeological standpoint, talking about this altar. I had not seen anything, and this is what I, you know, he and I have had this big argument because I'm like, Nehemiah, this is amazing. This is absolutely amazing what you've done, but you have to show people a picture of this altar because when you see its context on this mountain from a distance and then you see it up close, not only am I looking at an altar, all of a sudden my mind jumps to what the altar would have looked like in the temple, as you know, this being the prototype. So I'm not only looking at the altar there that Joshua's built, I'm looking in the past, Exodus 20, I'm looking in the future, and all of a sudden this picture that he took before he did this most amazing thing just brought a flood of information into my mind. And you know, we've been going back and forth, and hopefully I'll win this one argument. It will be three in our lifetime where he'll add a picture of this this altar, because people, if you see what it is that he did and where he and Yoel went and why this is such a significant, it really, you know, use the word best, a prototype. It shows you the past, that present time, and the future. It's just amazing. It's really, really, really amazing. I can hardly hold my excitement when I saw it.
So Yoel, actually, the photograph that I've posted on his latest conversation, the discussion that he and I had, and we also went on to discuss Shabbat, the photo on that post was taken by Yoel. It's an excellent photo of the side of the altar. Nehemiah, now I think Yoel did mention to me, but can you remind us, if you happen to know, how many biblically mentioned altars have been rediscovered by archaeologists in Israel?
Well, this is the only one.
This is the only one?
This is the only one. And not only that, this is the only altar discovered from that period, what's called the Iron One period, the Iron Age One. The only one discovered. There were two other discovered from the Iron Two. One was in Beersheba, and the other one was in Rod, and both of those were destroyed by King Josiah during his destruction of the high places. This one was never destroyed. It was buried, and the reason it was buried is that God chose Jerusalem as the place for all time, you know, henceforth to bring the sacrifices in the time of David, and so they must have buried it in the time of, and possibly even before that, when the tabernacle went to Shiloh, they probably buried it then. But this is the only one, and this is unprecedented. Nothing like this anywhere else in Israel. Now, here's the really exciting thing. And I'm going to preface it first by reading two passages. One, Genesis chapter 12, verses 6 to 7, says, "And Abraham passed through the land until the place of Shechem." Now, some people pronounce that Shechem. It's Shechem. And Shechem is a city that is due south of Mount Ebal, like, I don't know, a few hundred feet south of Mount Ebal, and about a mile and a half or so southwest of what is the true Mount Gerizim. And so that's the major city next to Ebal and Gerizim. So Abraham comes to the place of Shechem. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean the town square? Probably not, because he was a shepherd and usually would have pitched his tent outside the city. And it says specifically he came to the Oak of Moreh, Elon Moreh. And Moreh means teacher, same root as the word Torah. And it says, "And the Canaanite was then in the land. And Yehovah appeared to Abraham, and he said, 'To your seed I will give this land.' And he built there an altar to Yehovah who appeared to him." So Abraham is in the territory of Shechem at a location called Elon Moreh, and he builds an altar nearby Shechem. Okay, that's interesting. Yes. Then then Jacob, in chapter 33, verses 18 to 20, it says, "And Jacob came to Salem, a city of Shechem." Now, most people hear Salem, Shalem. You know, it says Melchizedek was the king of Salem, and they assume that's Jerusalem. And it may be in the case of Melchizedek, it's arguable either way. But this is obviously nothing to do with Jerusalem. It's Salem, the city of Shechem. And to this day, there's an Arab village just outside of Shechem, about less than a mile out of Shechem, called Salim, which is Salem. So Jacob came to Salem, the city of Shechem, because Shechem wasn't, you know, it was a city state. It had all these little, what they call daughters around it, these little villages.
Yes.
And to this day, that's the case. There's the metropolitan center, and there's little villages around it. "So when Jacob came to Salem, the city of Shechem, which was in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram, and he camped before the city, and he bought a field, a portion of a field where he had pitched his tent from the hand of the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 kesita. And he set up there an altar, and he called there upon God, the God of Israel. Now here we have him calling upon God's name, and we have him building an altar.
Yes.
Now what is now is it? I suppose it's possible that there were three separate altars built within this area of less than a square mile. Very possible. But if you ask me, it's much more likely that they all built their altar on the same spot.
Wow.
Turns out Adam Zartal, when he's excavating Joshua's altar, digs out beneath the altar, and he finds another altar below Joshua's altar, a round altar that was much smaller. And he says, look, this has to be probably a private altar of a clan or a large family or a mm-hmm. clan of people, whereas Joshua's altar is obviously monumental. It's massive. It's for an entire nation.
Mm.
And the bones they found buried underneath Joshua's altar, he says, those must have been the burnt remains from the earlier altar that was from a small clan or a large family. Now, maybe it's a massive coincidence. I don't think so. I think that smaller altar he found with the 942 bones that he found underneath Joshua's altar, I think that must have been Abram's and Jacob's altar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good and now look, could it be, you know, there were three separate altars? Maybe, but I think that's really, really unlikely. I think when Joshua came to Mount Ebal and he was reading in the scroll that he had written down and he transcribed from Moses and he's reading it, and he's like, wow, he wants me to build an altar in Mount Ebal. He gets there and he finds the altar of Abraham, and he finds, maybe the same spot, you know, because an altar would fall down over time. It was just field stones. So to build the altar just meant you put the stones back together that had fallen down. So he finds there the altar of Jacob, and that's where he decides. And it's very clear that whoever built Joshua, built it directly on top of the earlier altar, because the center of the circular altar, the smaller one underneath, is exactly the center point of Joshua's altar. So he intentionally built his altar over Abraham and Jacob's altar. And that's exciting to me, because here we have something mentioned in all these different biblical passages, not just a specific city. Like when it comes to Jerusalem, I can point to a specific city.
Mm.
When it comes to other Jericho, I can say, yeah, that's the city of Jericho. This is a specific structure in a specific location. And we can point to it and come back thousands of years later, and an archaeologist who isn't coming at it from a perspective of faith can dig it up and say, yeah, this is Joshua's altar. Maybe it's a cosmic coincidence, but you know, if it quacks like a duck and smells like a duck and looks like a duck, it's a duck. So, I mean, this is exciting to me, and this is why I was so excited about going to this place of all places and proclaiming the name the way that Abraham did, the way that Jacob did, and the way that Joshua did very exact spot and location.
So this
for me was a life-changing, exciting experience. This is why I'm jumping out of my
skin. You're jumping out of your skin. You're jumping. Keith, no wonder you were excited. Now, do you have anything to add here? I've got a couple of questions, but Keith, what's going through your mind?
I just want to say it is such a cool thing to sit back and watch Nehemiah be consumed in fire. I've been waiting for this time for 10 years where I couldn't. I'm just kidding. You know, I just have to say again, I wish people could understand the significance of this, Jonah, before we get into the journey. Here's Yoel and here's Nehemiah, who both live in the land of Israel. And here's this amazing place that people don't get a chance to go to.
Mm.
And what humbles me about this is the way that they went together to do this amazing act. I mean, this is not some, you know, marketing issue. This is a significant spiritual journey that people are on. And I felt like as I was listening to them, finding it, saying that, you know, they were going to go there and waiting to see this picture. And when I saw the picture, I mean, I got chills. So I'm just willing to sit back and listen to Nehemiah talk about it. But okay, I do want to talk about the significance.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question.
Why was such a big deal to go there?
All right, well, so let me confirm a couple of things first, Nehemiah. Now, did you say that this was uncovered? Like, people have been looking for this, I think you said, since the 1920s. It was uncovered in the 1980s, is that correct?
That's correct. By Adam Zartal, an Israeli archaeologist.
Okay, so only since the 1980s have people been able to go and visit it, and there have in the past been some tours, but they came to a crashing halt in the year 2000. Can you give us the details there?
Okay, so what happened in October 2000... In October 2000, the Palestinians launched this terror war against Israel, which they refer to as the Second Intifada. And one of the opening volleys of the Second Intifada was an attack that took place in October of 2000 when uniformed Palestinian policemen opened fire on a group of Israeli tourists who were hiking through Mount Ebal, going to the place of Joshua's altar, and there were women with their babies and children and old men, and they and the Palestinian police opened fire on them and had them pinned down for 11 hours.
Oh.
And one of the people who was a father of eight, or a rabbi named Benjamin Herling, a 64-year-old old man, he was shot by these Palestinian police, and he bled to death because they were pinned down for so long. Eventually, the group of dozens of people was extricated by the Israeli army coming with helicopters, and it was a whole operation. Mm. And after that, the Israeli army said, look, we can't have people going there. This was too much trouble. Mm. We got to come in with, you know, with all these forces to save the people from being, you know, shot by the Palestinian police. We're just not going to allow people to go to Mount Ebal. And it's basically been closed to the general public since October of 2000.
12 years.
And, every once in a while, they let a group in, and there's actually a group who, for the last 6 months, has been allowed to go with a small group once a month, only to the altar, directly to the altar. They're not allowed to go to anywhere else on the mountain. And what happened a few days ago is that they, for the first time, allowed people to hike through the entire mountain, which is important because you see the perspective. Because the first place they took us to is Shem. We go to the southern end. They say, there's Mount Gerizim, according to the Samaritans, that incorrect tradition. There's Shem. There's Tel Balata, the ancient city of Shem. You can actually see the wall. The same wall that Jacob saw when he camped outside the city in front of the city, and that Abraham would have seen when he camped outside the city. It's there. You can see, actually, from on top of the mountain, you can see the wall. It's so big, of Tel Balata, of ancient Shechem. And you see the Palestinian city that's clustered around that ancient site. And then you see all over Mount Ebal, how there are these Byzantine farmhouses and Persian guard towers and things like that, and they're made of stone, and you see the type of thing that Adam Zertal certainly expected to find when he uncovered this massive mound of stones, and then he was surprised to find an altar. And so it really gives you a perspective. Rather than just seeing this one site, you see it within its archaeological context, which is, you know, I studied archaeology for my bachelor's degree, and it's extremely important to always see the context. So this was really exciting to me. Mm. And so we actually spent hours hiking all over this mountain. We ended it at Mount Ebal's altar, the altar of Joshua, and you could see in the distance, actually not so far in the distance, you saw right across the valley, you saw what's called Har Kabir, or the Great Mountain, which is apparently the real biblical Mount Gerizim, not the one the Samaritans think it is.
Uh-huh.
And right next to it, you see there's a Jewish town, which is actually called the Oak of Moreh, Elon Moreh. Mm-hmm. And you see Salim, or Salem, the city of Shechem, which is also on the slopes of the real Mount Gerizim, on the other side of the valley. Okay. And so you really get a perspective of all the geography of the place.
Yes.
And so it was very exciting for me. And this is really the first time they let people go.
Yeah. But this is my question. In 12 years, you say there's been very small groups. They have to go straight to the altar. And obviously that's accompanied by...
Under heavy military.
By the military.
Yeah.
But now they decided to let a busload, and we're talking about 50 people, a busload go.
No, it was two buses.
Being two buses. Now you weren't initially on the first load of 50 that they thought they were going to. How did it open up into another busload? How did you get on it?
Well, so they sent this email out and they said, look, we're inviting people to come to this hike at Mount Ebal. And I'm like, what? That's too good to be true. I was one of the first people who called up and reserved a spot. And you had to pay in advance, you know, to get this spot. And you get to give them a credit card number and everything because, there's very limited space. And I called up Yoel and I said, dude, you should, call up and get on this bus too. He calls up and by then it's too late. All the seats are gone.
Oh, it was quick.
And they said, we'll put you on a waiting list. Well, they call him up. The tour is on Monday. They call him up Sunday and they say, okay, there are so many people on the waiting list. We ordered a second bus.
Nice.
And they ended up being two buses. Now, when I say bus, you have to understand these are armored buses.
Mm.
The buses had bulletproof glass on the sides, and that's because they go in very dangerous areas. You know, this is the Wild West, basically.
Right.
These are places patrolled by Palestinian terrorists, literally. And so we had a heavy escort from the Israeli military. Mm. There were two military jeeps, armored jeeps, and a whole slew of soldiers all over the place in front and on the sides and in the middle. And
wow.
Not to mention... there probably were plainclothes security there we don't even know about, but there were very clearly uniformed Israeli officers and soldiers with heavy weapons all over the place and securing it, because last time they opened fire and somebody got killed.
Sure.
And a lot of people were wounded. And so it was kind of surreal. I mean, here we are on the one hand, this is like such a moving amazing place, a beautiful place, a biblical place. And on the other hand, we can only go through our land if we're heavily armed with, you know, and surrounded by soldiers.
Military personnel. Keith.
Yeah. So here's the picture I'm getting. So I'm sitting back here, you know, in the United States, and I'm getting the report every once in a while. You know, Nehemiah will call me and say, guess where I am? Where are you at, Nehemiah? I'm on an armored bus right now. mean, my point is again, having been there, and not to being to that particular spot, but being in that land and thinking about Yoel and Nehemiah traveling on these armored buses, going to go see this most important place, and then understanding, as he just mentioned, you know, the hostility around such an important spot that 12 years ago these people would go there, they were going there to see this important spot and to be attacked like that, and then of course for the Israeli government to say, look, we just don't think this is a safe place, for it to be this many years later, I mean, I just have to tell you too, for me, when I know what the intention was that Nehemiah had and that Yoel was going to go to assist Nehemiah in doing what he did, just allow me to say why I just think this is significant, that when we do declare that we're going to let the world know that Yehovah, he is God, and he's going to open doors, he's going to send the chariots of fire, he's going to send the escorts, whatever it has to happen, because his name is going to be proclaimed. In the end, it's going to be the name that will be proclaimed throughout the entire world. But we're just starting now to say we're taking back places and areas and spots and declaring his name. So that's why I got so excited. Now, after hearing even more about it, you know, it brings chills to me all over again. So I'll take my 2 seconds, say something, and let Nehemiah burn some more.
So, well, let me just now you mentioned that Yoel went to assist Nehemiah in doing this, which is the video. Now, Nehemiah, can you tell us about the video and what actually happened, and where can people see it?
Yeah,
right. So Keith had, like I mentioned, he camped with this idea, and he camped with it before me. So, and you know, basically inviting people to go around the world and inviting people to be an ambassador of the name. Mm-hmm. And I felt so empowered by that invitation that he put out there, realizing, wow, you know, I can do it. You know, I don't have to have some special credentials or, you know, do something special. Each one of us who believes in the God of Israel can be an ambassador of his name and proclaim his name. And so I thought, what a better place to do it than that Joshua's altar at Mount Ebal. And I said to Yoel, you know, if you come along, and I was going to go along with him if he didn't. I was already on the bus, even if there wasn't going to be a video, because I wanted to go and be at that amazing, special place. But I said, you know, if you come along, then we'll have the opportunity for you to actually film one of these little videos. It's only 58 seconds we ended up filming, where I am explaining to people where I am, that I'm an ambassador of the name, and I proclaimed the same exact thing that Elijah invited the people to proclaim on Mount Carmel when he called upon the name, and that is Yehovah Hua Elohim. Yehovah, he is Elohim. He is God.
Amen.
And that's what I did there on Mount Ebal, and that, it was, like I said, so exciting to me, standing in the very spot where Abraham, Jacob, Joshua. Who else proclaim the name of Jehovah.
Now,
I got the opportunity to do that.
You got the opportunity to do that, and how long has it been since someone has actually done that? Give me an idea. Now, looking at the video, you can see there is a stone wall. You seem to be in a corner. Just give us an idea specifically where you were.
Well, and the reason I'm in that corner is that the wind was really, really powerful.
Oh, was it?
In fact, Yoel was holding the camera, and it was so cold he couldn't hold the camera. I had to take my gloves off and give them to him just so he could hold his hands up into the wind. And so basically where we are, we're on the back side of the altar. The altar has kind of like a little, it's hard to explain, like a little niche on the back side, and we're standing on the altar. I'm actually on the altar, and those two walls behind me are part of the altar, part of the back side of the altar. And the reason we're behind that wall is because even with the gloves, the wind was so powerful that we actually, in the first take, he couldn't hear me. Wow. And I'm like, well, we got to get behind a wall so that you can actually, you know, so it won't blend if we don't have the special equipment, you know, to protect against the wind. So we had to go behind this wall, which is actually part of the altar. I mean, the altar is a big structure. It has a ramp leading up to it. It's taller than a person. That's how big it is. It's a significant structure. And so we're actually standing in this little niche in the backside on the altar where Joshua stood, or possibly the location where Abraham and Jacob stood.
Now, Keith, with all of that information, let's now return, if you would, to that key verse in Exodus once again, wherever I cause my name to be mentioned, and Nehemiah, as you pointed out, this is specifically within the context of altars, there I will come to you, I will bless you. I mean, can you illustrate it a little bit more for us?
Yeah, so here's why this is such a significant thing for me. And now this is where I'm going to get controversial for our listeners. I'm just going to let you know this now, Nehemiah. Mm-hmm. And Jonah, why I'm going to get controversial, this is a setup. Here you have this Methodist. The people say, oh, it's a Methodist. You know, oh, he just, you know, he knows the name of the Lord. That's what he knows. Who gets a chance to meet my friend Nehemiah Gordon, who is as excited as people are listening to him. This man has studied, has given his life to studying the Hebrew Bible, understanding it, archaeology, biblical information, the Hebrew Bible. And has been so willing to share the information. And here we are now on the radio. People are listening to this information. Mm. This is information that he's sharing with us that we normally wouldn't hear. He's done the same thing on a number of different areas, but one of them has been in the Tanakh regarding the issue of the name of God. One of the things that's been such a powerful thing for me that I don't think people ever understand. Forget me for a second as the Methodist. Put me in the box. That's the Methodist. He doesn't know anything. But here you have a Jewish Hebrew scholar who is going to a spot that maybe it hasn't been done for years, surrounded by other Jewish people who are under the tradition that you don't speak the name of God. Mm. This guy gets on an armored bus with another Jewish brother. Neither of them are messianic. Neither of them are Christian the last time I checked. Nope. These are Jewish. Listen, these are Jewish brothers, one who's grown up in the yeshiva, the other has gone to an Orthodox background. Mm-hmm. Nehemiah happens to be Karaite. Yoel himself still lives in the old city. These two men got on a bus, went to this spot, and proclaimed the name Yehovah as we find it in the oldest complete vocalized Hebrew mm-hmm. manuscripts, as we understand it, for the world to hear. Now, do you think that's significant, Jono? I think that's significant.
It's blowing my mind, Keith.
Yeah, I think that's significant, Jono. I mean, and so Nehemiah and I, for the last few days, we've been fighting back and forth. I'm like, Nehemiah. He's like, well, maybe we should wait a few weeks. Maybe, you know, we should do... Nehemiah, enough of this, okay? I want the world to see the significance of what happened, because it took guts. It took conviction. It took passion. And that's what we want people to do. People can take this information. We have the book, His Hallowed Name Revealed Again. We've got videos. We've got all sorts of stuff. You want to find out the background to this? You've got all that information. But the application is, Nehemiah went and sanctified the name of God in a place that people say he can't go. And he went there and he did it. And you know what? He's the model for why we got to quit being willy-nilly chickens that don't want to accept the fact that Yehovah is God and this is his place. He, you know, the earth is his and the fullness thereof. Amen. I have to be excited about the fact that my brother took a call from me, the Methodist, put it in action, and took it to a different level. And I want to tell him how much I appreciate him doing that. But listen, listen, one more thing, Jono. This is a group of Jewish people.
Amen.
They went and did this in the presence of their brothers, Psalms 22.
Amen.
They went and told the world. So just excuse my excitement. I can't wait until we have one more fight so people can see the video. Go to the ambassador's embassy. If you don't see it in the next 2 days, call Nehemiah Gordon and say, why won't you let us see this video?
So this is it. You can see it on hishallowedname.com.
Yes, hishallowednamedcom.
The ambassador's embassy, it will be there.
Yes.
Yes.
Ambassador's Embassy, it's you just click, it's along the top there, and you'll see the video there. And my friends, you must go there. You must become registered for the newsletter, the Ambassador newsletter. You've got to watch this video. Oh, my goodness, you've got to see Nehemiah standing at the place. Proclaiming the name. You've got to see the look on his face. He's so excited.
You've got to see the excitement and the fire that's
awesome.
Inside of his belly.
It's incredible. I just really, you guys, I love you guys. This is just great. Boy, I love this show.
Can I just do one more thing? I want people to know something. And Nehemiah was concerned. He said, well, Keith, you know, by me doing this, people will think they've got to go to, you know, some amazing spot, and they've got to make it bigger. Listen, there is no contest here. What happened when Nehemiah did this took it to a completely different level. But again, what his concern was is he wants people, and Nehemiah, say what you said to me, to people, what we love about people just going into the middle of their cities or going to their...
Yeah, I mean, there are some videos that people have already done responding to Keith's invitation, going to the town square. going just in a, you know, any place in your city and proclaiming in a public place, proclaiming the name Yehovah. So you don't have to go and scale Mount Kilimanjaro. you know, not look, if you can do that, that's awesome. Do it.
That'd be great.
But we also want to invite people to go to, all kinds of places. It doesn't have to be an obelisk. It doesn't have to be some bombastic place.
You don't have to
just
blow the
go somewhere where people can hear you and proclaim the name Yehovah. You don't gotta blow the shofar. Proclaim his name the way that Abraham did, the way that Isaac did, the way that Jacob did, that Moses did, the way that Elijah did on Mount Carmel. Proclaim his name. Make his name known to the nations.
Amen.
Hey, can I say this also, Jonah? There is something that we did, and I want to thank Nehemiah for this also. He, you know, he taught me about this whole deal of YouTube. I always fight him. He tries to teach me technology. I don't know. So the great thing about YouTube is you can take a phone. You don't have to have some great, you know, major technology. But you can upload it. What we've done that I think is significant is everybody that does a video calls it Proclaim the Name, and then they give a description. Mm-hmm. They talk about it. They lead people. We want to see a movement. We want to see people getting to the place where we can actually have people see this witness, the witness of the name being proclaimed. So again, why is it such a big deal that Nehemiah did this? I think what better place to really get this started than from Mount Ebal. It took the Methodist in New York City to get the attention of my Jewish brother Nehemiah Gordon, who now has taken it to the what I call the real Proclaim the Name spot. Now let's use that example of Nehemiah and let's go everywhere around the world, Australia, Africa, South America. Let's proclaim the name. Let his name be known throughout the world and just, you know, I'm just, you got to excite. You guys got to understand for me why I'm so excited. I just see this happening, and it's humbling that to watch Nehemiah and Yoel go on this journey. And I just hope people can experience the weight of what they did. It's just it's amazing. Nehemiah, thank you again. It's
so
now if we can just
invitation.
Get that video from him, we'll be fine.
No, it's already public on YouTube, and it'll be posted probably before this interview up on
IsHallowedName.com. Once I put it up, can I also put a link to the ambassador's page? Sure. Can I put a link to the video as well?
Absolutely.
There's one thing. Yes, you will be able to do that. It will be set up, and if we can just get that picture, we're going to be all set, guys.
There we go. And so there's the invitation and the challenge to everybody out there. Go to the ambassador's page on HisHallowedName.com. And you can register there. The instructions are there for you to, and it's very, very simple to go to YouTube, and you can use your camera, you can use your phone, or if you happen to have a video camera, that's great, but just record something less than 2 minutes, if possible, just something small, and upload it and send it to Proclaim the Name campaign. Nehemiah, thank you so much for doing what you did, and Yoel as well. And Keith, thank you for coming back on the program. Look forward to speaking with you guys again, and that'll probably be the next Torah Pills. Boy, I'm so excited about that as well.
Absolutely.
There it is. In the meantime, dear listeners, thank you, and be blessed and be set apart by the truth of our Father's word and our Father's name, Yehovah. Shalom.